Ready?
Yeah, we can start.
Welcome to Wheel to Wheel, the premier Formula One podcast by two crazy, sexy, cool ladies who know medium to nothing about Formula One.
I'm Zaylee.
And I'm Maya.
Lights out and away we go.
Okay, so welcome to the post show, the post conference.
Welcome to the press conference.
Yeah, the post press conference for the Saudi Grand Prix.
Didn't you guys have a blast watching it?
I had a blast.
Me
with
too.
With a caveat. But yes.
You had a blast with a caveat.
The caveat is that, I don't like when Max Verstappen wins. So that's the less blast for me. And I've seen a lot. We'll get into this. But, Twitter has a lot of interesting opinions about this that have felt that they're relevant to this conversation. So
I was going to say, stay off of F1 Twitter.
Why?
F1 Twitter is so weird.
It's not. No, it's not.
I don't think it's representative of everyone that's watching F1. I think it's a strange group of people on F1 Twitter.
No, of course not. But I'm finding things that I agree with, which then helps me build my opinions and worldview.
Maya, I don't like
cherry picking.
You're very, very much, you're an anti-Maxer.
I am kind of an anti. No, I'm not anti-Max. Sorry, I'm just kind of letting that sink in. I'm not anti-Max.
Uh-huh.
But I don't really like him.
Okay.
But let's talk. Let's not even get into the nitty gritty. Let's talk a little bit about free practice. Let's talk a little bit about quali because there's been some interesting goings on there.
Yeah. What do you think the big takeaways were from free practice?
Big takeaways from free practice. Ferrari to me has a rocket, right? I think Charles Leclerc. I was kind of doing a little research before I came here, but I think Charles Leclerc and Ferrari are just doing really well. Yeah, straight up. What about you?
I was going to say during free practice, Ferrari, both of those cars touched the wall. Mm-hmm. And so I think going into the weekend, it was a little bit of is Ferrari going to be able to, one, repair their car, but also are they going to have trouble driving in this circuit?
Mm-hmm.
I think free practice did not set up. No, I don't think anyone thought Checo was going to make it to pole.
No, that's what I'm saying. Because everything that I've read about free practice has been Ferrari Leclerc, Ferrari Leclerc, Ferrari Leclerc.
Yeah.
So it was kind of I think it was surprising that he ended up on pole.
Free practice was also a bad omen for Lewis because halfway through was, I don't know if it was FP1 or 2, he was just I need the higher seat. And he came into the pits and they literally put foam under his chair to boost up his chair a bit.
He needs a booster seat.
But it was kind of, to me, that I felt like that was just an indication that he was having some anxiety about how he was driving that weekend.
Totally.
Because I could see needing a higher seat, but to stop in the middle of free practice to be boost my seat up, maybe it was just a quick fix, but why not just finish free practice and then get your seat boosted?
I don't know. It is interesting, Mercedes brought in a revised rear wing for free practice because they're trying to, those little engineers back at the factory are just tinkering away because.
Giving it everything they can.
Yeah, because they just, for obvious reasons. So they brought this new rear wing, hoping that it would help, eat away at some of the time from the top two teams, Ferrari and Red Bull. He did not do that. And what's also interesting is he's not doing as well as George Russell with this car.
I don't know if that's the way it was in free practice, but that's definitely the way it ended up looking by the end of the weekend.
Totally.
I will say, though, he was putting in, okay, we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Do you want to talk about quali a little bit then?
No, I was going to talk about the end of free practice, too. There was a bombing.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I wanted to talk to you about that.
At an oil facility 9 miles away from the circuit.
Right.
Literally, Max was driving around. He's like, I smell burning. He thought it was his car. Meanwhile, they're in a war zone.
Yeah.
And it's literally the gas from an Aramco facility.
That's on fire.
Yes.
Yeah, that was a whole thing. There was a huge press. I keep saying press conference. It really wasn't. But, a meeting with the team principals where they were going over, whether or not they should race. The drivers apparently all had a meeting together. I saw pictures from it, and apparently it lasted way into the night where people were, talking about what
Four
to do.
4 hours long. They talked until 1 a.m.
Yeah.
The CEO of Formula One Racing was called in.
He flew in for that, Stefano?
No, I just think they, like, either he was there and they, like, he had to be called into the room, or maybe he was just called in via Zoom, but yeah. It, like, made the news that there was this important person who had been called in. Two people, Stefano Domenicali and someone else. But, yeah, it was. I don't think that all the drivers were in agreement. And also, during the post-something conference, the New York Times, which is so funny that the New York Times now has a rep, like, F1 in these rep. Press conferences. Mm-hmm. But they're like, the New York Times, a question from the New York Times. And the New York Times is like, how do you respond to rumors that that F1 was coerced into being here this weekend?
Whoa.
Because Saudi Arabia was like, if you don't race, we're going to make it difficult for you to leave the country. Whoa. Like, they were saying, like, oh, it was presented like, if we were to leave early, like, we are not guaranteed that we'd be able to get out the country in time for it to be safe or something like that.
Yeah.
It was interesting hearing the question framed that way. They were like, how do you respond to rumors that F1 was coerced into racing because otherwise they wouldn't be able to get out of the country? Like, that was a threat from Saudi Arabia. And then... what's the name of the team principal of Ferrari?
Matteo Binotto?
Yeah, Matteo Binotto.
Matteo Binotto.
He just completely ignored that question, basically, and was just like, everyone's in agreement, it's safe. But it's clearly that's not the case.
No, and also when I was reading some of the statements from the F1 powers that be, I was like, this is feeling a little bit like, even the way Stefano was talking about it, he's like, safety is our number one priority. And we wouldn't be here if it wasn't safe. But it kind of felt like, is, like, someone making you say this? Like, just doesn't seem, at least for me as a driver, I would not feel, that's not, it's just kind of boring. It's like, that's, you're not giving me much to go off of there.
It's not right.
Also, yeah, Michael, it's not right. Also, I read about, people were complaining, they're like, you know, the pit crew, they should have a say in this. Like, you know, the marshals, they should have a say in this. All of these people who are forced to be there away from their families, who are also in the same danger as the drivers, should have a say in whether or not they race in Jeddah. And they, I'm sure they did not.
Some of the team principals were like, no one asked us not to race. No one asked us not to race. And I was just like, I don't believe anything that comes out of F1's mouth. I don't believe any of these. I just can't even believe, too, that none of the drivers actually said anything about, like, the fact that it's all mum's a word, no one's saying anything, makes me think that something went down. And I don't know if they came to an agreement because, you know, they all got a bonus for driving this weekend. I don't know what they bargained for and why that meeting would take until 1 a.m. when they know they need to race the next day. Like, don't they need sleep? It just feels like an emergency.
It did felt very emergency. And as Lewis would say, cash is king. So I feel like that's a big part of why they're racing.
And this is the last thing on this, but they all have this very corny way of being like, well, you know, part of the reason that we race
to raise
is so that we can raise awareness and put, like, good positivity into the world. And so we should be doing that by racing here. And I'm like, what awareness, positivity? What are you guys talking about?
Nothing.
Like, no one has said anything specific about anything regarding the politics of Saudi Arabia.
No.
So what exactly are they bringing to the country?
Yep. And even before this oil factory bombing, like, people have been talking about the ethics of racing in Saudi Arabia. Like, that's fully been a discussion before. And I feel like people like Lewis and also people like Vettel have been very vocal about the fact that maybe we shouldn't be doing this. So I think it's a crock of cock-a-poo-poo, if you ask me.
And speaking of, separate from the politics of racing in Saudi Arabia, people also last year were complaining about the safety of racing in Saudi Arabia. And I feel like they were proved right by
because
some of the things that happened on this track. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
that's a good, yes. That's
transition
into
qualifying
quality.
On Saturday.
Which you watched and I did not. I only read about it. So do you want to give your impressions?
Yeah, sure. Q1. With 11 minutes to go, so basically within the first 5 minutes of the session was red flags. Latifi.
So many good tweets about that. It's too much.
Latifi. Anyways, but the wind, like, it was something about the rear and the wind and whatever.
He, like, I heard
went
it all
out.
Before.
But Kevin Magnussen, before those 5 minutes had gone by, he put in a P1 lap. Like, not that's that he crazy. Was ever going to be P1, but he was top of the time charts.
Yeah.
When that happened. And then who got eliminated in Q1? Obviously, Hamilton.
Yeah.
big loser.
Big loser.
In
I mean,
Q1.
I mean, it's like, what do you say? What do you say to that? What do you say?
What do you do? It's brutal. I'm genuinely curious about how he is going to come back from this, just mentally.
Me
because
too.
He just seems like such an emotional guy. And
if I were him, I would be crying every night personally. Like, for me, this just, oh my God, I already have thoughts about the race, but it's hard to say because I feel like he's just not used to
losing
and he's not used to like battling in the back of the grid. Like, all of these things feel like novel to him. He hasn't done that in so many years. I don't know.
People kept bringing up that the last time that this happened was like years ago.
Yeah, like 2017.
2017 because he crashed, and then but the last time he's been off of pace, 2015. Like, this is just unthinkable.
What did they do to this car? Like, I'm actually shocked. I just don't understand what changed, what happened, how do we go from like the quality of engine that we had in 2021 to this? This is crazy.
I think it's a bunch of things. I think George Russell is doing really well in the car. Separate from
maybe because he's used to driving not so good cars.
He's like, I think George Russell had a really good performance, and so that is also setting him apart. Lewis might have had a bad day
at the office,
and then also he just might not be like suited to the driving. What the necessary driving style might be for that car?
Yeah, I mean, yes.
He's like, are we at risk now? And Bono's like, A firm, we are at risk, Lewis. We are at risk. It was really sad to watch and shocking. One more thing about that.
Okay.
Lewis was 6/10 off of Russell in that qualifying.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think it's really meaningful that 6/10 is the difference between being in Q1 and not being in Q1.
Mm-hmm.
Just the field is so tight.
It is.
The field is so tight. Not to make more excuses for Lewis, who we obviously love, but the field is so tight.
No, and what you're saying is completely reminding me. Zaylee mentioned last week a Carlos Sainz interview on Beyond the Grid, a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And Carlos Sainz was literally saying that. He was like, it's hard. You have drivers in like whatever 15th place and a driver in first, but like the margins between each of these cars are so slim. He's like, there's nobody here who's a bad driver.
There's no room for error.
Yeah.
No room for error.
You have to be, and that's what makes it all the more impressive, right? Like, when you do well, it's like, like, you were able to squeeze out that extra 10th or whatever.
Yeah. Another thing that happened in Q1 that I took note of was that Sainz was faster than his teammate. And it was beginning to happen this weekend. I think it happened a couple times this weekend that Sainz was faster than his teammate. And I think it was Joelan Palmer who guessed that Sainz would be ahead of Leclerc in this race, but he was just like, I feel like Sainz is really trying to fight back.
Yeah.
And it was exciting to see that it was possible for Sainz to be ahead of Leclerc.
Yeah.
I really hope Sainz gets
a win.
A win. Yeah, gets ahead of Leclerc.
I think he will. I have faith in Sainz. I think he is a really good driver, and he's showing himself. Yeah, he's just showing his ass in a good way.
And then in Q2, there was a big grid drop for Ricardo. His team didn't tell him to get out of the way of Ocon, and so he got penalized. Like, on Sunday, he started a couple of grid places behind, which was sad. And it's also interesting to just, they're going so hard about the regulations
yes.
this year. Like, and I think last race, we didn't really see it because not a lot of people got penalties in the last race. But this race weekend was just, like, rife with penalties.
Yep.
Brutal.
And and reviews and whatever, yeah. Things going to the stewards.
Brutal. Haas was going really fast in Q2. Haas is like,
dude. Dude.
It's so cool. It's cool to see.
It is. It is.
It's cool.
It is. They were literally bench warmers last season.
Yeah. Yeah. And in Q2, ugh. This is so sad. In Q2, Mick Schumacher was faster than his teammate. So he was going so fast. Mick was speeding.
Yeah, and that's why he ended up in the wall.
Such a heavy impact.
Yeah. He's okay. He didn't race, though, in this race.
He's okay. But that car looked atrocious.
It did.
As they were picking up the car, half the car fell off. They were, like, picking it up to take it off the track, and half of it just
It looks
crashed.
Like toy cars sometimes. Like, sometimes if you just look at it from one perspective, it's like, these guys are literally driving around in these, like... Like, they the way things can fall apart mm-hmm. once you hit the wall or whatever is just absurd.
One thing I liked hearing about Schumacher was that he thanks everyone in the paddock. No matter
Mick?
What. Yeah. Before, even no matter how he performs, he says thank you to everyone.
It's cute.
But he had this really weird looking moment where they put the cameras on him while he was like strapped into this medical gurney.
Yeah.
And there were like 100 people standing around him. And he did not look happy, but the announcer was like, and look at that. He's got a smile on his face. And I was like, this guy needs to put on glasses. This man is.
He looked sad or he looked.
He didn't look sad. I don't know what he was saying, but he was looking like he was telling somebody something.
Hmm.
He was just like pointing.
Oh, okay.
And like, I don't know. He was showing teeth, but it wasn't a smile.
Okay. A grimace or something.
Yeah. I'm glad he's okay.
Me too.
I'm glad he's okay. When I saw that and he wasn't responding for a really
yes,
long time.
Yes, bro.
It was scary, and I was just thinking, this man is really like a darling. Like, it wasn't until he crashed that I realized, oh, this would be really precious. Like, he's a precious boy.
Yeah. He is, to me, so cute. I really like him.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It would be, you know what? Let me not even think about what would happen if that was a worse accident.
And then Q3, the people who actually ended up making it to Q3
mm-hmm.
were Leclerc, Sainz, Verstappen, Ocon, Russell, Alonso, Bottas, Gasly, and Magnussen. And Sergio got his first ever pole position.
Sergio got his first ever pole position, which I like. I think that's good. I read somewhere that he got a bonus for pole, for being on pole. Helmut Marko said that. But I was like, do people always get bonuses for being on pole? They do.
People get bonuses for laps led, number of laps led. So if they can get ahead and they're even up for 8 laps of a race and they were the first.
Like per individual race you get a bonus or over the season?
Obviously it depends on your contract, but they give bonus, like you can work out. It's kind of like the NFL where they get bonuses if they make it this many yard lines or if they
I didn't
like,
even know that.
They're like unlocking new, more pieces of money.
Okay. And is I'm curious, is the money coming from F1? Or it's coming from the team.
Yeah, and speaking of, we got a question about cost caps.
We did get a question about cost
Someone
caps.
Someone sent in a question to us to discuss. Yes, F1 has instituted cost caps. They are trying to phase it in. Mm-hmm. So for some teams like Mercedes, who've probably been spending so much more money than a team like Haas, they're like people have time to catch up mm-hmm. gradually and sort of figure out how they're going to do it. But that money is only related to the performance of the car. So
like it can only be spent on the performance of the car, or like the cap
cost
is related
cap
to
only
it.
Applies yeah. to money that's been spent on car performance. So bonuses like that you work out with a driver about lap time and getting ahead, mm-hmm. and if you get so many poles, you get this much more money. That's separate. That's a separate pool of money. They don't have to like also play business decisions with that.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's helpful, but just some
yeah,
context.
That was helpful.
But yeah, Perez in first, and this is his first pole
it
position
is his first
ever.
Pole, yeah.
Which I didn't
his last pole was in F2, which I didn't even know he was in F2.
Yeah,
it's been a long time ago.
A long time coming for Perez.
So let's get into the race a little bit. Let's get into the actual race.
Before we get into the actual race, I watched the pre-race, and I think it was spicy today.
Okay.
It was just a funny pre-race.
I didn't, who did you say more?
Well, Carlos's car, they were working on it at the last minute.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that.
Crazy town, and everyone was running around.
It's like huddled
like,
around. Yeah. And, like, you see all this massive red around his car, like when it's about to, yeah.
Will.i.am was on the grid walking. I guess he was like near Mercedes, so I guess he was a guest of Mercedes this
okay.
weekend. I thought that was interesting.
Nice.
Yuki Tsunoda didn't even make it out of the garage, which is exciting. Just for the mixiness of
oh my
last podcast, I'm like I said, I'm a fan of there being reliability issues, because it's the most, you know, you're playing a video game and then all of a sudden, I don't play video games, so I don't know, but this is the best example I can think of.
Okay.
You're playing a video game and then they just throw at you like, now it's slippery. And then for like the rest of the game, it's slippery.
Oh, like a Mario Kart. I thought you meant like Gears of War. Yeah, I can relate to that.
Yeah. I don't even know what Gears of War is, okay, but like Mario Kart.
Yes. It's like when someone throws a banana yeah. peel and you have to, yeah.
And reliability is that type of just fun factor to me. Like banana everyone's, peel. You know, the race is going and then all of a sudden like, oh, this three engines just went out. And it's yeah. like, whoa, like the race just changes.
Yeah. It's like, yes, it's like, I was going to give another analogy, but yes, exactly. And there was a couple of things like that that happened.
Yeah.
This race, which is really funny.
And Yuki Tsunoda started it off with that.
Yeah, the avalanche.
Yeah, it's exciting. It's funny. It's funny. How shall we begin? First of all, which commentary did you watch? Crofty and Button? Jensen Button?
Or, I don't even know what the other option
or is. Or Joylon Palmer and Will Buxton.
Crofty and the first guy.
Yeah, they're the better ones. I was just curious because last race we had a conversation about commentators and I think I had watched a different commentator. So we were talking about who they were and I was like.
No, I did not watch Joyline. I think Joyline Palmer phoned in at some points. Like, you know, or not. Maybe that wasn't Joyline Palmer then. Guys, I have no idea. But I watched the first two people that you named.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I did not watch Will Buxton, who kind of annoys me.
I know.
He's sweet, though. He's sweet.
He was, like, on the grid doing the pre-show, and someone walked past him, and I don't know if he... We talked about doping. I'm not accusing him of doping, but I don't know what drugs he took or if you he was just embarrassing.
Okay, can I just give you a side note? Zaylee is... Whenever I describe a weird interaction with somebody, Zaylee is like, okay, and do you think they were on drugs? That's, like, her first question.
Because a lot of people are on drugs of so many different kinds. It's true.
Okay. I mean, I guess that is true.
Like... Anyways.
Okay. Sidebar.
But Will Buxton, like, someone walks past him, and he's so hopped up. Like, he just has so much energy that he, like, pump fakes, does a 360, turns around. Like, someone walks past him, and he's just like, and, like, turns around, turns back to the camera, and starts speaking again. It's like, dude, whoa. Chill out.
I mean, this is his life's work. He's obsessed with
Obsessed.
Okay, so let's get into it. First thing, in the first few minutes of the race, here's what I've noticed, and I'm sure, yeah, I would say the first part of the race, this was really big, is freaking the Alpines.
How fast they were, or no, that they were fighting?
That they were fighting. Like, that's just among the beginning of my notes. First of all, the first thing I wrote was, why do they have this ugly-ass pink color still? I hate the livery. I think it's so horrible. That's
AWT.
A.
AWT.
Yeah. But I was just really interested in, like, that dynamic. I think a lot of other people were saying, like, it was fun. I kind of thought it was stupid because I feel like it kind of felt like they were so concerned with each other that they weren't, like, paying attention to, like, just moving up on the grid. It was just, like, cat and dog, like, a mouse and a cat, like, fighting for the whole time. And I feel like it fucks up your tires, like, to be that aggressive. And I don't know. It just kind of felt a little pointless to me. And it also felt like, who was behind them at that point? I think Bottas.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, I guess that their fighting also kind of stops Bottas from, like, getting into that because Bottas is not going to want to, like, go in between. But I don't know. It just kind of felt a little short-sighted to me. What did you think of that?
That they were cannibalizing their own performance by yeah. spending time fighting in the beginning.
And for a while, too. Like, everyone was, like, kind of, like, laughing. It was like, what are you doing? And also, when they called Otmar Snafzauer, the team principal, and they were like, are you going to tell them anything? And he's like, no.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm not going to say anything.
I think it's hard because you don't want to just get in their heads and start, like, moving things around so early in the season.
Yeah.
It's also, like, Ocon started it, literally. Okay. Like, he did such a ridiculous move yeah. on him that I think he shouldn't have made Alonso, like, angry. And from that point on, like... Alonso gives me Lewis Hamilton vibes. He's just not the one to mess with.
Yeah.
Did I ever tell you that story about Alonso at McLaren and how he, like, basically got the whole team in trouble and they ended up having to pay a $50 million fine?
No.
Years and years ago, back in the days, where Alonso and Hamilton were racing together, it was Hamilton's first season with McLaren, and Alonso was like, I am the number one driver,
mm-hmm.
and you guys should be telling Hamilton behind me to back the off. And also on this team, like, people say that Alonso, on teams in general, people say that Alonso has way too much influence and is just, like, a very powerful man in the paddock and, like, tells people what to do and is, like, just, he seems difficult to work with. Like we said, the divas of the world are difficult to work with.
Yeah.
But what he did was he said that he knew information about McLaren cheating and was basically like blackmailing his own team.
Okay.
And was like, if y'all don't tell Hamilton to stop fighting with me, I am literally going to tell them that y'all are cheating.
I'm going to air you out.
Yeah. And the whole plan freaking backfired and they got in trouble and the FIA fined them $50 million. And, like, that is just some old F1 history that I always remember when I see Alonso. Like, this man does not play. Like,
Totally. And I think the commentators were saying that, too. Like, because Ocon started it and it was, like, his first advance, Alonso was like, So, like, every dude, like, was like, just, like, he was not letting him have it.
Yeah.
It felt very much like... It felt a little personal to me, I guess. Maybe that's
his personal. Ocon is annoying. He used to fight with Perez.
Back when they were both on,
Like, Ocon is not, he's not an angel.
No. But I was just like, I was just curious. Seeing that made me super curious. Like, what was their strategy going into this race? Like, I'm just curious as a team, like, what were they thinking? What were they trying to do? What was their end goal?
Yeah.
I don't know. I found that to be
interesting.
Interesting, to say the least.
Yeah. I think also, like, I'm not going toe-to-toe with Alonso. I'm sorry. I understand that Ocon is a big talent and that he got this ridiculous 5-year contract.
Yeah.
But it would not be, it's not in his best interest, I think, to make Alonso angry.
You don't want
to
fight with somebody like that. They have no...
And I also think he wouldn't have been fighting as hard if he didn't think that he was the faster car.
Yes,
and throughout the session, he was the faster car to me. Like, once he gets ahead of Ocon, he also got ahead of a lot of different people. So
yep.
I think he was within his right.
Yeah.
It was messy.
It was messy. Another thing that I noticed in this race, excuse me, and I think this, yeah, this is such a good race to talk about it because there were so many overtakes where, like, one car overtook the other car, like, you know, in a few laps it was over. The other car would, like, switch back. But just the strategy for overtaking and wanting to overtake before DRS so that, like, once you're overtaken and you can, like, hit a straight with DRS, you can actually put distance in between you and the first car. I feel like that today was, like, a really big lesson in that because there were so many instances where cars were swapping around.
Yep. And I also think this type of racing rewards people who learn really, really, really fast.
Yes.
And who are like, okay, this guy's pulling this trick on me. Let me do something. Like, you have to be smart enough to be creative and you just have to be thinking You have to be thinking. And you have to have the space. Carlos talked about this in this interview that this is the third time we referenced it in this podcast. But he talked about, like, how drivers need to be driving on, like, using 70% of your brain to drive so that you can use 30% to actually think about the race more broadly.
Yeah.
Race strategy in general and, like, how you're going to actually overtake at the next corner. And when you're using too much thinking space to drive, you're not able to do that.
Yes.
So also, maybe it's not even just, like, how intelligent drivers are up and down the grid, but how well-suited their cars are to them. How much their cars allow them to have the thinking space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's an interesting way of putting it. Because if you're struggling to even maneuver the car, if your relationship to the car is fraught, you're not going to have, you're just trying to keep the thing from, you're trying to keep the thing on the tracks. So you're not worried about at what point do I make this overtake or not or whatever.
Further up the grid at the beginning,
mm-hmm.
you also had Verstappen ahead of Sainz.
Mm-hmm.
And Verstappen was able to make that move. Sainz qualified, what did he qualify, third?
Yes.
He qualified third. Verstappen started in fourth but got ahead of him at the start of the race because Sainz tried to get around Leclerc.
Yes, I saw that, yes.
Big mistake.
Yes.
Big mistake.
And also, they were saying that Leclerc wasn't... Now, I can see it in my head, but it's hard to describe. But just that Leclerc wasn't, like, protecting a certain part behind him that would make it hard for Max to do that overtake, basically.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Or something like that. There was something where, like, Charles was, like, just very focused on what was happening ahead of him, and it kind of left Sainz a little bit more vulnerable. And then Sainz also did something that, like, just
yeah
wasn't that helpful.
messy start in the beginning. Messy start for the front runners. Just messy.
Very messy.
Another thing that was happening was that Max obviously panicking because he's literally in, like, he's in a podium position. He's not P4. I think he's P3 at this point in the race. And behind Leclerc, he's like, I don't see his lights. I can't see when he's harvesting energy.
I think
that
was a little later, but yeah.
It's like, he's chill annoying. Out. Chill out, dude.
And even, yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
He complained all the way through the end of the race, like, Leclerc is outside of this white line. Mm-hmm. He's going past the pit entry line and he's doing all these things. And I was just like, this is so interesting because if they didn't lose this race, if they didn't win this race, then Max fans would have had all the information that they needed to talk about why he lost, if that makes sense. Why it wasn't his fault that he lost.
Using Verstappen's comments as...
His comments and his complaints. And it's interesting how as soon as he crosses the line first, thank you to the team. And then none of that.
Like, dude, don't even get me started. It's like at the end, he was like, it was a fair race. It was really fun. And then you freaking
right, but
go
the whole
back,
time you're talking
you're
about how fair
it is.
Yeah.
The whole time. I find that to be so irritating. And there were also, I don't want to get too much into this, but I have other thoughts.
So then finally, Alonso gets in front in sixth. Like, I think that is settled that Alonso is ahead. And they also told Esteban Ocon, hold the position.
Yes.
So at that point
finally,
in the race,
they were
like,
you have to,
stop.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I think also, was between them, was there an overtake that happened outside of track limits? Is that why he had to give?
There was an overtake that happened outside of track limits, and he gave back the position.
That's what I'm thinking of. Okay.
But then he tried to get it back again, and then
I was like, what are you guys doing?
Well, at this point in the race, right before Latifi goes into the wall, Hamilton is also up into 10th place.
Yes, I had that down too. He moved up.
He was moving fast.
Yes, he was.
He was moving fast.
Yes. And I think it's complete. And this is, it's interesting because obviously he ended up in 10th, right? He's not doing well by his standards or, you know, by most people's standards. However, like, he did 40 laps on the hard tires and where did he start?
That man was working it.
It was crazy. And he got up to 6th place and was battling, yes. Or 7th.
Wait, how many laps were there in this race?
52?
Okay, so I think he did 30 laps. Whatever he did, he didn't pit until there were like 20 laps. He did a crazy amount of laps on these tires.
Yeah.
He did a crazy amount of laps.
And he was doing well, to me, for a while up until the like second safety car situation.
Yeah, they played him with that. And Mercedes, we'll get to it, but Mercedes always be making the most freaky decisions.
Freaky.
I think they make the most weird under pressure decisions. I think they just don't like, I don't think they're good losers and are good at being in the back and like making the right decisions being in the, they haven't had enough experience not being first. And I think it really affects them. But Anti-ways. Another thing that happened was that Ferrari dummied Red Bull into pitting.
I love that.
I was like, oh, shoot. Are we really playing those games?
I freaking love it.
Are we really going to play those
but
games?
But how did that happen? Because you're not, and this is something that Max pointed out very clearly, is like you're not allowed to, it has to be very clear when you're about to enter the pit lane and when you're not about to enter the pit lane, right? Like you can't get crossed into that line. So what is the dummying maneuver?
The dummying maneuver was all over the radio.
Okay.
Pit to confer.
That's so funny.
Pit to overtake. They like played with what they were going to do over the radio.
Yes.
And
Okay,
and lied.
Cool.
And lied.
Okay, because I remember hearing that and then they didn't pit. Cool. That's so funny.
Yeah.
Obsessed.
Yeah. Very, very, very freaking cool.
Obsessed.
And even down to the acting, people always assume that Mercedes was, I remember last season they were like, oh, but is Mercedes bluffing? Is Mercedes bluffing? They always used to say that when Mercedes would, like, when different teams would pull, actually come out and take the tires out and pretend like they were about to pit. But it never happened last season.
That's what I'm saying. I don't remember someone pretending to pit.
It never actually happened.
Yeah, getting it ready and it didn't happen.
But this happened.
That is so good and so funny.
And it was very embarrassing. So it puts Perez behind Russell in fifth. And then the first drama, which is the safety car.
Yes.
And at that point, then Perez had made a huge mistake because he had just pitted and he could have had
that. That was horrible.
Yeah.
That was horrible. And I think him coming out of the pit lane. Wait. Can I just mention something else about Latifi?
Yeah.
Going into the wall. Because people on Twitter were like, anytime Latifi has the chance to like radically change the course of a race by going into a wall.
He will.
He'll do it.
He will do it.
People are like, when are we going to have this discussion? It's kind of like, you know, the butterfly effect where like a butterfly lands on a flower and then there's a tsunami. That's like, there's like a Latifi effect.
Yeah.
Where he goes into the wall and then the whole race is completely different.
And obviously different drivers react to going into the wall differently. He's like, I don't know what happened. I'm like, what happened is you just crashed, Latifi.
Ooh.
You just ruined a lot of people's races.
Okay, so then we have the safety car moment, and that messes up.
Safety car moment, and what happens on the safety car line, too, mm-hmm. is that when the safety car is called, Sainz is out front in yes. front of Perez.
Yes.
But then Perez pitted. Then as the safety car goes on, Perez gets out of the pit lane and is like, and Sainz is also rounding the pit lane exit.
Yeah.
And is basically run off track by Perez.
Yep. Sainz
who
really
doesn't
was
give the place? Who he doesn't did. Give the place back?
He did.
No, I know, but like for the entire time of the safety car, and just like, why did he have to be told?
That's so interesting because I actually wrote down.
I just don't get why he had
the
to be
place
told.
To Sainz before the stewards had to tell him. So the Red Bull told him, but yeah, but you're saying why didn't he make that decision without
right.
Red Bull telling him?
Like you're coming out of the pit lane exit, and you know he's ahead. Unless he didn't know that he was ahead.
Yeah, I don't know. But also, here's another thing about this race that's so fascinating is, like, for the first, in the first part of it, it felt like actually the stewards were a little bit more hands-off. And I feel like as the race is going on, then the stewards are getting more and more involved. I think this is something that the commentators were also just talking about. Mm. It's just interesting to see how much the rules are really affecting the race play and how the race is happening.
Yeah. Zhao has had to serve a 5-second penalty.
Yes.
And then he had to serve another penalty for not serving that penalty.
At first they were like, oh, I think it's because they're trying to get the nut off with the gun. That sounds so pause.
They didn't explain that well.
They didn't.
I did think that the team like, I think what it is, it's like they cannot do anything while the person is serving those 5 seconds. And, like, by trying to figure that thing out.
It was bad.
You can't even do that.
But I felt like the commentators were giving, who does he race for? Alfa Romeo? Giving Alfa Romeo a little bit more.
The Benny of the D.
Huh?
The benefit of the doubt.
Okay. Yes. They were like, oh, I just think they didn't know. I'm like, I don't know. Like, you know, like, I would also be, like, trying to figure out how best to do this so that I can get my, you know what I'm saying? Go zoom, zoom.
Alfa Romeo is so funny.
Alfa
that
Romeo's
whole team
funny.
Is funny. Fred Vasseur.
Valtteri qualified in sixth for this race, did he not? He was in sixth place on the grid start, on the whatever, when this race was starting.
Maybe he did, yeah.
He's doing really well.
He's doing so well. Those cars are so fast.
Yeah, I'm really happy with him, even though he was DNF today. And yeah, but I thought like, yeah, I think he's racing competitively this season.
Yeah.
It's cool.
So then after that whole drama goes down with Zhao and the pit lane exit and signs. And
wait, I also have to say this. Another thing I noticed is back when like they had the yellow flag situation where, you know, they have to like slow down and they're racing side by side. Charles was like first and Max was second. And you could just see, and it reminded me so much of Abu Dhabi, like the way that Max is so pushy, even when he's in second, when they're doing those like,
mm-hmm.
you know what I'm saying? And it just was kind of annoying me because I'm like, you are so aggressive. Like you give the person no room. To me, it's like just dangerous. Like,
did he wave at Leclerc?
I think that was at the end. But I did see that clip.
He waved?
You think he was waving during that like part where he was doing
yeah,
this back and forth?
I'm okay, asking.
I didn't notice that. No,
I don't know that he did. I think the commentary was like, "Oh, is he waving?"
I saw that, but I never saw it with my own eyes.
If he was waving, I think Max and Leclerc. It's so interesting to see them race and how different how they deal with rivaling each other in a race, because they've just been racing for a really long time.
Yes,
and. If he did wave at Leclerc, I think that just speaks to how they think about racing in general and how seriously they're taking this.
Yeah.
Versus what it would mean to like wave at for Max Verstappen to wave at Lewis Hamilton. Could you imagine if he was like right behind him during a virtual safety car and was waving?
Yeah.
I think Hamilton wouldn't even know how to deal with that psychologically, processing that.
And here's another thing that I was thinking a lot about, was just like the racing dynamics, obviously, between the two of them, because they have this history. You see and hear so much respect that they have for one another. Max, and this part of my issue with him is like that did not really happen with Lewis last season at all. Like,
but the thing is, during this race, I wouldn't say that it seemed like Max had a lot of respect for Leclerc. He says the same thing, but the whole time he's like,
yeah,
complaining.
Well, that's because he's whiny. But I'm just saying, outside of the race, it's like, oh, like just the accolades and. He did not act the same way, or he didn't give, to me, he never really gave Lewis his flowers, and that always frustrated me.
No, and I don't think he ever intends to.
No.
I think a lot of people don't think Lewis is that talented of a driver.
That sucks.
Let's keep going.
Yeah, let's keep going.
But so after all of that drama, then the order is Leclerc, Max is teasing Leclerc from behind, right behind him. Then Sainz, then Perez, who had to give up his spot to Sainz after the restart.
Yeah.
So now Perez is in fourth. Russell got ahead of Kevin Magnussen into fifth place, so Kevin's in sixth. Hamilton stays in seventh, but Fernando is hounding him.
Yes, they were in really eighth. Battling.
And then Hülkenberg is in ninth. I do not like Hülkenberg. And it's also, what is Vettel doing?
Like, having coronavirus?
I think Vettel is better now and was like, I'm not racing in, in Saudi Arabia because this facility just got bombed.
Is this the second coronavirus thing?
This is his second week out. And like, so it's been, he's not getting in the car. And I think that this has more to do. Vettel is a political person.
He's super political.
And I feel like he's also just taking this opportunity to be like, yeah, I'm not racing. Like, best believe. Yeah. I feel like if Vettel was in Saudi Arabia, he left before the race.
He's like, I'm going home. Is this the second time he's freaking gotten coronavirus?
He hasn't been at the paddock this whole season. Nico Hülkenberg has, like, been doing it. Yeah, Hülkenberg was up into ninth at that point. Valtteri Bottas was in 10th. Ocon was in 11th. Ricciardo made some gains, so he ended up in 12th because he pitted way before. Like, he didn't have to go through the whole losing an advantage because of the pit thing.
Mm-hmm.
Pierre was in 14th. And then Zhao all the way in 15th because he served the 5-second penalty, or did he? And then Stroll was in 16th at that point.
Okay.
Hamilton and Magnussen started beefing. Yeah. And this is the thing. What is the Mercedes racing?
Killed me.
But still very cool to see.
Yeah. And it was cool to see because, to be honest, the Haas was doing a good job. I'm like, it's not good.
Yeah.
It wasn't.
There
was
some jeopardy there. Would Mercedes be able to get past it?
And then I remembered too, I'm like, why is this car so fast? And I'm like, this damn Ferrari engine. It has a freaking Ferrari engine.
Yep.
It's over. And McLaren has that Mercedes engine, which is why they're down in the dumps right now. Dang, they lucked out.
The customer teams were asked this question during, I spoke to you about this, during the press conference where they were just talking about, like, are y'all blaming Mercedes? Because clearly it's not a coinkydoink. It's not a coincidence that all of y'all, that all of y'all are not doing as well as the Ferraris. And they were saying that they were trying to argue that it was a coincidence. Obviously, they have to do this for press reasons.
Right.
But they were just like, you know, it's not the straight line. The straight line speed isn't the reason why we're going slower.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's happening for us is this overheating in the corners. The engine, yeah. And they all have, like, different reasons for why they're saying that it's not exactly the Mercedes engine. But also, and I should probably do some more research on this before saying it on this podcast.
Go ahead.
But apparently, because they're homologated, there are some aspects of the car that are more connected than they ever have been before. So the engine is connected somehow to more parts of the car, and you cannot, like, some of the changes to the philosophy are going to be big overhauls. If the Mercedes wants to improve on their engine, it's like, it's not, they didn't just build an engine. If you bought a Mercedes engine this season, you bought more parts.
Huh.
That's the impression that I'm getting. The engine itself is more connected to more things because it's homologated.
Okay. And that kind of also means to me that, like, the problem is bigger. It's kind of like when you have cancer and then the cancer, like, metastasizes in other places, you know? It's like now you have a whole system of things happening. I mean, Daniel Ricciardo's car was retired. And he literally had to be, like, he could not move. Like, they had to push him like it was a freaking sled across the track, which is kind of funny.
So that's what brings about the next yellow flag. And by the way, before this next yellow flag comes up, Red Bull is also, like, Max is freaking out. He's like, in second. He's in second, so it's, like, chill, but he's still freaking out. And his team is just, like, let us do the work.
Yeah.
We are going to work on, like, trying to harvest, giving you commands that will help you harvest power. And I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
That they can, like, work out trying to draw more from the car throughout the race.
Did you know that he has 7 penalty points right now, Max?
Yeah, but they reset on the year.
Okay.
So, like, on the anniversary of you getting that penalty.
It goes away.
Yeah, so they're all not, like, he has 7 penalty, but I've seen some of these graphics. I'm like, this is kind of misleading because not the penalty points are all going to start to fade. Yeah, so I think at some points in the season he'll have fewer.
Definitely.
But it is interesting because I don't think that last season there were as many penalty point having drivers.
That's what I'm saying, because last season the stewards were just, I don't know, I guess I don't know if the stewards was asleep, but, like, the rules have just changed so much so this year that I feel like, I don't know. Not that he's being more careful, but it's, I don't know. We're getting a really interesting series of races.
Yeah. Well.
Well, well, well.
Then Alonso's car runs out of power.
Yeah.
Cool, the car was flashing on his dashboard.
I know. That killed me because I was like, that feels very much like, I don't know. It just felt so flat out, like, cool the car. It's like,
cool the car. I was like, Daniel Ricciardo's car has no drive. Valtteri Bottas's car retires.
I didn't see that happen. Did you see that happen?
Did I see his car retire?
I just didn't know why. And then I feel like I saw him rolling into the pits and saying that he was DNF, but I couldn't figure out why.
And as this happens, this was Lewis's opportunity. But this is when we get into the freaky decisions that I think that Mercedes makes, strategy calls that they make when they're under pressure. Lewis Hamilton at that point had been on the same freaking hard tires. He was the only driver in this entire Grand Prix that had not pitted yet. And they were so gung-ho about betting on a safety car to make him pit that they did not call him into the pits
earlier,
even when Fernando Alonso behind him goes out of the race, like, he retires. He's having issues with his car. Mm-hmm. At that point, he had more than, I think, a 13-second gap to the person behind him. Like, he was within a window to be able to safely pit and get out of the pits and still not lose any track position. And at that point, he had fought for a crazy he was in sixth.
Yeah, he was in sixth.
He had a crazy amount of track position. Like, he literally could have pitted and nothing, he wouldn't have lost anything.
So I thought that there was a moment where, because of that safety car, the pit lane wasn't open for a while. Like, but you're saying that was after.
But that was even after. Like, Fernando Alonso doesn't lose power in his car. For a second, four people passed him before he actually had to, like, pull off.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, he was just like, I'm losing pace or whatever, and was slowing down for a while. That was Mercedes' opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Then they go into this virtual safety car, and it was kind of, I've never seen that happen where someone's literally stopping the pit lane from being used.
Yeah, Daniel was? Yeah, that was funny.
So.
But they say stopping. It's like, there was room. Like, they just have to be careful. Like, I feel like they could have squeezed in.
Yeah, someone got in. Kevin Magnussen, I think, was able to pit before the pit lane actually closed.
It was so interesting to me because the decision to stay on hard for that long, like, in the it actually was, like, working for him. Like, it felt like a gamble in the beginning. I think the commentators were talking about that. Like, oh, you know, he actually may have done the smarter thing by being on these hard tires. And then I feel like the strategy just went out the window after that.
Even he was on the hard tires and for a long, he was, you know, right behind Russell. But I noticed, like, for even a couple laps before all of this happened, he was losing a lot of pace.
Yeah.
He was, like, 9 seconds down. I was just like, even though he's saying in the car the tires are okay, you cannot literally bet your strategy on a safety car.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
and
bro. Other,
and I feel like that's what not desperate teams be doing, but it's like there was another team that I'm trying to remember, but there was like, let's just hope for a safety car. It's like, let's not just hope for a safety car. Like maybe not. Like, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, because sometimes something happens and it's like, oh, like it becomes this amazing opportunity, but who knows if that thing doesn't happen.
There's too much recency bias. Like, I think that they literally had just seen Perez not benefit from pitting in the safety car.
Yeah, that sucked.
Like pitting and then right after there being a safety car. And so, but I don't think that they should have let that influence it. This is, I don't know. This is stupid decision making. I'm like, y'all are dumb for that.
But George Russell, on the other hand, I feel like they didn't really show him that much, to be honest, during the race. I felt like they weren't paying too much attention to him, but he just, like, it was a good.
Because he's never within range of the person before him or behind him.
He just, yeah, did he
he's
start?
He's in no man's land.
So after that Lewis debacle, I feel like he was kind of giving up in the car low key. And I feel like a lot of the focus shifted to the fight in the front with with Charles and Max. Not much more happened. It was really just Charles and Max in the front. And again, like, I guess this is coming full circle to what I was talking about earlier about like overtaking, because there were so many moments where Max is like just trying to attack and then like it doesn't work. And then he does one overtake and then it doesn't stick because he's not being strategic about the moments in which he is going to, you know, press forward.
Yeah.
But in the end, it worked.
Excuse me. He took the lead on the straight. I think it's interesting that the two cars were running on different set up strategies. Like, one car had more downforce than the other.
Oh, okay.
And they were running, like, opposite philosophies.
Hmm.
So it's interesting how we've said this before, but how tight it is that, you know, they made this change, they went in a different direction. And so, but every single time they're catching up in the corners and on the straights and in the corners and on the straights. And so, like, it's just trading and trading. But that they ended the race basically under a yellow flag because of Stroll and Albon. And I freaking hate Lance Stroll, bro. I literally hate Lance Stroll. Lance Stroll this weekend, I feel like he thought he was so the hot because he literally knocked Lewis out of qualifying at the last second.
Oh my God.
Then him and Lewis have a little tussle and Lewis gets ahead, but I was just like,
oh yeah,
really?
I remember that.
Are you really going to sit here and fight? I don't know. I was just like, is this how you're going to use your energy on Lewis Hamilton?
Yes. What was the accident, though? What did he do?
He, Alex Albon had, like, within a half a car length behind. He was like, he didn't give Albon the space.
Okay.
And then when they crashed, he was like, Albon just dive bombed me. He just dive bombed into me. Oh my God.
Yeah, I was like, what is a dive bomb? I didn't even know what that meant.
I,
yeah, like,
I think he was just saying, like, he just
okay,
tried to, like,
cut into his.
Send it and go crazy in this corner. But I think that was Lance Stroll's fault. Like, he didn't give him space. He had the line. So he was just doing he was being aggressive, and I guess that's good for you, but I don't sympathize with the billionaire's son. And on top of that, like, he's annoying. No. He's been annoying this whole weekend to me. He's just been a thorn in my personal side.
It is annoying.
Anyways. But yeah, Mercedes, both cars in the points, I guess.
Both cars in the points.
Hamilton in 10th.
Let me read this tweet that I'm curious what your thought is, okay? Max winning today is unironically good.
Who wrote the tweet?
At Brocedes. At Brocedes says, Max winning today is unironically good for Mercedes. Never forget that having different drivers win until Mercedes finally catch up, hopefully by Australia/Imola, is a very good thing. Let Ferrari and Red Bull Racing take points away from each other. The gap has to remain small and within sight. I think this is a very hopeful POV.
This podcast cannot be a Mercedes-supporting podcast.
It can't? Why not? Wait, no.
Because it's broad, and we want to have a broad audience that is not just LH fans, because that...
Hashtag team LH. Hashtag 44.
Yeah, because that limits how much money we can potentially make.
That's fine. I just...
But to my response to that tweet is... I don't think it's a good thing that Max won today, and nobody's going to convince me of that. What are you talking about? Like...
You're just like, net, it's always a horrible thing.
It's a bad... There's no... What do the comments say? That
makes I understand what they're saying, but let's see what the...
They're like, having a different driver win is a good thing, but it's not going to be different drivers. It's going to be Leclerc, Max.
Yeah, and they're just saying that, like, having the very... Like, not having one team, like, fully clear it is good because it gives more opportunity for other teams, basically. But it's still very optimistic to even think that Team LH, hashtag 44, hashtag Merc, is going to even be able to touch...
I just think that tweet only works if there are other teams in the mix. But
yes,
it's only
that's what
those
I mean.
Two teams.
That's what they're saying. This is like on the premise that like once Mercedes catches up at Australia, I'm like, you think but in 2 weeks from now they're going to be finna like, they're going to be finna, they're going to be like on pole? I would like to see it. I would like to see it.
I would like to see it as well. I would like to see it as well. So we've gone through the whole entire race.
Yep.
Do you want to talk about anything else?
I feel like my main takeaways from this race are that I think that Charles is a really competitive driver, so I'm just enjoying watching him race. I think he has a sense of calm, but also knows a little bit when to get his elbows out, and I think I saw that a lot in the last few laps of this race. I think, I don't know.
One of the random thoughts going through my brain this weekend has been just listening to Lando and Daniel talk about why they're not where they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
And I just want to point out that they're the two ditziest drivers on this entire grid.
Like, okay, so funny you say that.
They are. They're just personalities and the way they act. Are. And they also, like, don't seem to be that interested in the technical elements of the car, mechanical elements. You know, last season, I know it's a joke, but Lando was like, oh, it's a bit blowy outside. And he's like, oh, what's the word? Windy? And like, he literally couldn't say the technical term for wind. And I feel like windy is something that a driver, the word windy should come very naturally to a driver, that it's windy outside. He's like, oh yeah, I could have been throwing us off because it's a bit blowy. And like, was just struggling with that word. And Daniel Ricciardo, I don't know what it's like down at Red Bull in his glory years of Red Bull.
Me neither.
But just the, and maybe this is on him for walking around in guacamole shoes, but like, he needs to
hunker down more. Is that what you're saying?
I think that this era, and especially the beginning part of this, of any era, is going to reward drivers who have an understanding of what things feel like in the car, like what they need more of, what braking systems, what could be affecting things aerodynamically. And the teams that are ahead right now are teams that are just Carlos Sainz. I know he's in Ferrari, like talking about the actual car. People say Lewis is kind of in, like, he literally seems like an engineer. Yeah. He knows a lot about cars. Valtteri Bottas, probably same. And what I'm just saying is after this race and seeing how poorly McLaren is doing, even though they've taken a step forward, I'm just interested in what the relationship is between how much drivers know about the mechanics of their car and how to make them go, and the quality of the information that they can share with
yes.
their teams.
Yeah. It's funny that you say that. In a post-race conference, someone was talking to Lando and was like, you know, it's the only way is up. And he's like, no, actually, we can go down too. He just like was talking. Yeah, he just kind of went a little bit on a diatribe of like being very negative and whatever, which is fine because I understand why you might feel that way. But I think what's missing from a lot of those comments is an understanding of like,
what's actually going wrong
with
the car?
Play? Yeah, what is at play? Yeah. Because I think, and it's so interesting because Lando is really young. Like, he's a really young driver. And it kind of reminds me when people have, like, these natural aptitudes for certain things. Like, these natural instincts where it's like, I get in the car and I know. Like, I just can do it. Mm-hmm. And I feel like sometimes when you are really good at that, like, a lot of the technical stuff, like, falls to the wayside because you're just going off of, like
feeling.
Yeah, you're going off feeling and like, oh, I just know how to drive the car. Like, you do and you're good at it, but like, he does need more, I would say, like, background information.
Yeah, some of the drivers are tight-lipped with things and it makes me think that they don't know what they're supposed to know.
Yeah,
they ask like Lance Stroll and he's like, obviously we're gonna work on making it better, we're working on making it better. And
yeah.
I'm like,
it
do
is
you know?
Really complicated though, like, not to even, it's just like, you do have to be really f***ing smart to even understand what is happening on an engineering, like, scientific level.
Yeah.
And you're right that some drivers read like they can do that much better.
They seem like they're good at feeling. I know Vettel, for example, that man, if he can use his ears to hear what's going on in the engine. And I think the commentators do a good job of that. I'm not even sure that the drivers, based on their feeling are as well informed as some other people in the sport, like the commentators, who some of them are former drivers, but they're able to be like, oh, let's hear it. Oh, yeah, a couple gears. He had a misshift, like blah, 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 blah. And even during the race, Carlos Sainz being like, oh, I had a misshift. That was interesting. Just reporting that to the team. Like, I'm not sure that every driver can hear and feel those differences and are noting the things that they should be mentioning to the people at the pit wall.
I mean, and I think what you're saying is more to the point of how collaborative this sport is, like, in one sense, right? Because, like, you have these meetings with the engineers and the team principals and da-da-da. But it kind of reminds me, like, you're studying for a test. It's like you have all these resources, but at the end of the day, it's like you inside of the car. And, like, you have to make it go. And, like, people can help you, right? You're getting your little, your information through your earpiece, but it's like their hands are not on the wheel at the end of the day.
At all. At all. Really cool race.
Cool race. I mean, we're off for 2 weeks, and then the next race will be in Melbourne.
In Melbourne. Next week, I think we're just going to have, like, a fun episode.
Yeah.
I don't know what it should be about, though.
should be something completely not F1 related.
No, it should be F1 related.
I know. I'm just kidding. But wouldn't it be funny if we did do that?
We could do, like, I've been gunning for F1 astrology. I'm big into
that. But we don't know how to, like, do that.
Well, we can just use their sun signs.
And just talk about it?
Yeah.
Okay. I said we should drink and do stuff, but Zaylee did not respond to that. Because she's boring.
I'm not sure that it would be as exciting as, like, maybe if we had a YouTube channel and you could see us progressively drink getting champs. Drunk. But, like, I feel like us being, I've heard people do drunk podcasts, and it's not as interesting to the listener as it is to the people doing it.
Do you have any car stories?
No.
Okay. I have one that's really barely a car story.
What is it?
Just that when I went on this date this weekend, and the guy told me that he had a car, and then he, like, you know, would drive around, and he was like, yeah, like, I drive around 40 minutes for parking sometimes. And I was like, 40 minutes for parking?
It's atrocious.
Isn't that crazy?
It's atrocious. No, I've seen it.
I mean, I've been in the car. Yeah, me too. Me too. And it's horrendous. And also, why did I bring this up? Oh, it reminded me that my older cousin always said that she first started dating her boyfriend who is now her husband, because he had a car. And I was like, damn, maybe that's something I should be looking for in a man.
Yeah, cars are a really emotional thing. I was recently, like, just watching, I see a lot of TikToks where people are talking in their car, and I'm like, that's something that I've never made and I can never make. Like, I can never relate to the experience. Yeah. Having a separate place other than, like, my room go and do something.
I think people have really formative conversations, especially in high school for whatever reason. I feel like people have very formative conversations in the car.
For anyone wondering why we literally sound like we don't know what a car is, it's because we're from New York City. And so we just don't, people in New York, you don't need a car in New York. And a lot of people don't have them and just take the train and the buses.
Right. Which is what I will be doing as soon as we wrap this up.
Yeah. As an adult, and the more lazy that we get and just impatient and annoyed in general and more jaded, the more frustrated I am by not having a car.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's funny, on the date we were talking about Coney Island. I'm like, that is a great place to drive to. Like, it is. Just being able to have that, like, freedom and agency to.
Yeah. Taking the train to Coney Island is not it. You got to carry your beach chair.
God, it's horrible. I did that last summer.
And your cooler.
Dude, I did that last summer, and I was walking down the street. I changed my sneakers for flip-flops, and, like, someone's running after me. I'm like, what the hell? He's like, miss, you dropped your shoe. My shoe literally fell out of my bag and was just laying on the street.
The struggle. Anyways, great car story.
Thanks.
Did the date go well?
It went well, but I wasn't that attracted to him.
There'll be more dates.
Energetically.
All right. See y'all next Wednesday.
Bye.
Y'all.